Emma Carney, not too far away before we hand over to Michael Felgate on Racing Pulse. But any day is a good day to talk to Andrew Bogut, of course, one of our favourites in Australian sport and a former number one draft pick on NBA Draft Day. Good morning, Bogey.
How's it going?
Going all right, buddy. The NBA draft, let's start with that because I imagine when you get to this time of year with your number one status back in the day, that this brings back some memories. What are your memories of draft day?
I hate the time, actually. You know, it was a very fast-paced, kind of bright lights type atmosphere, and I was kind of just looking forward to just kind of getting selected and getting on with the job kind of thing. I wish I would have enjoyed it more looking back, but as a young fella, it was all foreign and new to me, and you know, anxiety and nerves and all that put together, you just want the whole thing to be over with.
Were you prepared for it? Did they try and give you a little workshop dry run about what to expect?
No, not really. It's all pretty genuine emotion. So, you know, I had no idea where I was going to get picked, who was going to pick me, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was all pretty natural.
So we see now the guys, Andrew, they've got all these flash suits. They've got all sorts of things on there. The day is all set up for them. Social media is all set up. Take us through your day. What was your day like as the number one draft pick?
So once I got, you know, obviously you go there a couple of hours before, you get your family there at a table. I had my college coach, agent, mum and dad, and then you sit there and kind of wait, and then they start proceedings. You know, once it's live on TV. Thankfully, I heard my name called first, so I didn't have to wait too long, and then they get you straight to the back, and you're doing media from all around the world, including Australia. You're doing probably about 15 different stations of media, and then you do a few more things in the NBA, and then you kind of we had a little after party planned. Just booked out a restaurant and had friends and family there, and then the very next morning I was on a plane to Milwaukee.
How proud of a moment was that for you and your family, being obviously a kid from Australia, a kid from Melbourne that you know, played all his local basketball or junior basketball here, then went to the States. Did you have a chance to reflect and spend a bit of time with your mum and dad to reflect on where you come from and where you've got to?
A little bit. Look, that night we did over more than a few drinks. So yeah, it was. But like I said, once it kind of got rolling post draft, it was then a whole other journey of getting to Milwaukee, finding a place to live, and meeting the GM, meeting the coach, going to the practice facility. So there wasn't a whole lot of time really afterwards to spend with my family, to be quite honest with you. So they flew back to Australia after that, and I went to Milwaukee and spent about a week there just doing the PR stuff and all that, and then we met up in Australia and caught up after that.
What was the pressure like being the number one pick? Did it? I mean, obviously, it has its advantages, but does it have some disadvantages as well? Or once you get into the system, it's quickly forgotten about.
It's not. Look, I was fortunate that I went to a small market. If I would have went to New York or LA, I doubt I would have handled it as well, because there's a whole lot more scrutiny and pressure and all that. Milwaukee was a bit more of a smoother transition, just because they gave me about, you know, a year or two to kind of adapt to the NBA game and settle in. I was still 19, 20 years old and wasn't as strong as I am now, and was still growing into my body, so it still took me a little while to excel. But once I got going, I thought, okay, but look, there's a bit more of a microscope on you, and that's something you got to deal with even 10 years into your career, people still, you know, mention it.
What about the difficulty of the kids that are drafted that come from the European teams? There's a kid that's going to be drafted fairly high in Luka Doncic. I think that's how you pronounce his surname. What about the difficulties of those guys changing the style of play? You were fortunate that you got to play college basketball. These guys are coming over from the European leagues. How long does it take them to transition?
Yeah, a little bit. Look, I had to transition myself, the NCAA to the NBA is a different game itself, and it's the same thing with Europe. Europe's probably a bit more acclimatized to it because you're playing against grown men and former NBA players playing in Europe and big physical guys. So I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's a really good player. I think that the game over in Europe's obviously, and overseas in Australia has gotten better over the last decade. So I think the transitions have been a bit better. But nothing can prepare you for, you know, 82 games a season and 4 games a week and getting to cities at 2 or 3 a.m. That's probably going to be the biggest shock to the system for most international guys.
The Phoenix Suns have the first pick in the draft, and it seems from all the reports, Bogey, that a bloke just down the road in Arizona will be number one pick, a 213-centimetre giant, a massive man, DeAndre Ayton. What do you know about him?
Very, very good player. Very athletic, very nice touch. Seems like he's got a great feel for the game. Basically, all the things you'd say about someone who's a potential number one pick. I mean, Luka Doncic has the same attributes. He's just a different position. So, Ayton can obviously affect the game a lot more defensively. But, I don't think he'll go wrong with either of those guys, to be quite honest with you.
And while this is certainly a part of the conversation, NBA fans at the moment, the other big one is the LeBron situation, what he's going to do, whether he stays at Cleveland or moves on or gets Kawhi Leonard, which has been reported as well, might join him at Cleveland. What does basketball need LeBron to do?
I don't think basketball needs to do anything, to be quite honest. I think he'll make his decision, and I think it's the Warriors and everyone else, to be quite honest with you, mate. So I don't think... wherever he goes, puts that team over the top to win a championship. The Warriors are the team to beat. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some conversations being had right now for the record between some superstar players who are trying to formulate a way for them to get themselves all on the same team, whether it's Houston or LA or wherever it is, to try and at least compete with Golden State, because you can build a team wherever you want with whoever you want. By the end of the day, you're not going to get Golden State. And I guess if you try and win a championship, you've got to try to figure out a way to get through them.
Is that, well, taking that conversation a bit further then, with the Warriors, and you've been a part of their system, obviously, winning a championship with them, is it good that they are so dominant, or does there need to be a way to try to even out the competition a bit?
Well, there's naysayers either way. So, some people say it's good for the league. Let's not forget Golden State, hard for... the best of two decades were absolutely terrible. So now they've had some success, and they're playing really good ball. They've got a really good culture and foundation there. And obviously it helps when you can sign a guy like Kevin Durant in free agency after coming off two championship years anyway. So, some people say it's not fair for the league, but I guess through the Jordan era and different eras, there's always naysayers about the winners. So if you're winning, you're doing something right, and if they're talking bad about you, I think it's all a good thing.
So then, talking about the Warriors, Andrew, what do you think is the best way to go and beat them? Look, LeBron nearly did it in Game 1. They should have probably got over the line in that game. But how would you go about beating the Warriors in a 7-game series?
I'll bring a few baseball bats, mate. The best way, to be quite honest with you, like you watch the final series. I think it was Game 3 in Cleveland. Mm. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson shooting, I think, 20 or 30% of the game. They both had absolute stinkers, and they still win the game comfortably because a guy named Kevin Durant has 40-plus points. So the luxury that they can have one of the few teams in the league that can sustain one of their superstar players having an absolute stinker, and they still win by 10. Most teams in the league, if your superstar player has a bad night, you're probably not winning that game. And if you are, you're winning by a point or two, and these blokes just turn it on and win by double digits. So that's just a sign that they're just very, very deep. Skip continues to enter retool. They've got a couple of aging bodies on their bench, which they'll get rid of, and they'll bring in some new kind of older veterans that want to play for the minimum. It's going to probably get better.
It's horrifying even to think about that they could get better. We've asked you about this before, Andrew, just about Steph Curry and him as a person, knowing him as you did as a teammate, and that sort of those egos of LeBron and Steph going at it the way they did through that series. Is that all theatre, or is there genuine sort of that real competitive, and almost not hatred, but dislike for each other? What are they like off the court?
I don't think they're mates off the court. They hate each other off the court. Look, the NBA, like most pro sports, when the lights are on, there's a lot of extra muscle put on things. But at the same time, they're playing in an NBA final, so you'd hope that they don't like each other, if you know what I mean. If you see blokes laughing and hugging each other on opposing teams in the NBA finals, probably not the right message for you, not just for the game, but for your own teammates. I think there's a lot of muscle, especially in the regular season. You've got a lot of blokes saying, beat me outside, you're faster, and all that kind of crap. That's kind of laughable. But there's a few guys in the league that you don't want to mess with. Steph and LeBron, I think, off the court, no issues. I think it's just that fiery competitiveness on the court.
I'll ask the question a little differently. Does it mean a lot for LeBron to be seen as number one? And from a Steph Curry point of view, does it mean a lot to him what other people think of him or how they judge him? Or are they the sort of athletes that don't care about that sort of stuff and they just let their basketball do their talking?
I mean, LeBron definitely wants to be in that conversation with, you know, the number one of all time. I think that's very important to him. I think he's always been competitive to try and you know, be Jordan or be better than Jordan. And Steph, not so much. I mean, Steph just kind of goes with the flow. I think now he's figured out that he gets a guy like Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, takes a bit more pressure off him. He'll still have great seasons and chances to win championships and be part of a great team rather than just being a great individual. But, you know, they're both in their own right are absolute superstars and they just do things a little bit differently.
Now, what about the Kawhi situation? Because he's one of the most understated superstars in the league, and the Spurs, they don't lose players. They've created a culture down there that they just simply don't lose players. Are you surprised by this situation and the way it's playing out at the moment?
Yeah, it is. It is. I've reinforced Popovich is. I haven't met with him. He's about to meet with him, so that can usually mend a lot of bridges. They had a similar situation a couple of years ago with LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah, another one of their superstar players who was on the ledge and ready to jump and wanted out, and then they miraculously had a meeting with him and he changed his mind and signed an extension. So I wouldn't put it past. If it's one team I wouldn't put past mending that bridge, it would be the Spurs. But, you know, the NBA is a funny league. I know Kawhi's family's kind of involved in it. I know he's got an uncle and someone else who's leaking a lot of this stuff in the media. So you just wonder how much actually is coming from Kawhi himself.
It's a fascinating part of the off-season, all the business that goes on. What about your off-season? What's happening with you?
Just working out, getting ready for the NBL, mate. Just back in Melbourne at the moment, training and getting in shape for an August start in the pre-season. I'll move up to Sydney and commence proceedings here.
Most importantly, have you added to the car collection over the break?
Nah, I don't know, mate. I haven't even had a chance to take any of them out. We're a 19-month-old and we're expecting our second two, so... between that and the Sydney thing and doing media and all that kind of stuff, I haven't had a lot of time for myself, so I've kind of just kept them tucked away.
So what's the one car you want to add to the collection before all this is said and done?
Well, that's a good question. I was looking at a Phase 3 XY GT, GTO, but they've gone absolutely bonkers now, and one, I think a couple of weekends ago, just went for, I think went over $1 million, so I had a chance to buy a few a couple of years ago for about $300, so I'm kind of slapping myself right now, but yeah, that's probably the next one. But I have cash, as we all know, I don't think I can fathom paying $1 million for an XY GTO.
I've got a $20,000 Corolla you can have second hand if you want. You can have it tomorrow.
Oh, it's all yours.
Buggy, nice to chat as always. Great to have your insight into draft day and what's happening in the NBA, let alone the domestic scene as well. Good luck. We'll chat soon.
No worries.